Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome everybody to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio filling in for David Hayes, who is away at a conference this week in a wonderful location. I know he's having a great time and getting to meet up with some other financial advisors and also get some new information. Nothing quite like continuing education. We all need it, and certainly in our industry, we go for as much of that as we possibly can. In the studio with me this week is Mr. Ryan Belcher and Mr. Wayne Thacker, and we are going to be going over some state public employees plans and some federal benefits, stuff that these guys really are experts about, and they know exactly what they're talking about. So if you are out and about on this absolutely gorgeous Thursday evening and you fall into the category of a employee of the state or employee of the federal government, you are going to want to listen to this. Before we get started, though, I want to give a couple little tidbits about some behavioral finance things that we have seen developing over the last year. Last month, the March 2015 unemployment numbers came in, and our nation's unemployment rate was 5.5%. That is the lowest in the country since May of 2008, so almost 7 years ago. We have the lowest employment rate since we've had in the last 7 years. So there are a lot of people who are now beginning to feel a little bit more excited about employment, a little bit more excited about job opportunities. I had some opportunity to travel this weekend down to see my mother in a number of different places I saw were hiring more than normal. So there's some opportunities out there for people. But when we know what happens when people get very confident, the next thing you know is they begin to take on debt. And so a couple things that came out this week also that I think are very, very important. 42% of U.S. households headed by individual between the ages of 65 and 74 are still paying off their home mortgage. Wayne, you were in the mortgage business for quite a while. Tell me about this.
The reason people have.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about the people who are taking on these mortgages, when did they take these on? What's
the problem,
going through their minds?
Yeah. The reason they still have mortgages into retirement is because you get to the end of your working career and you still have high school seniors. You still have college students. You're paying So that's, I mean, that you're taking on that debt later on in life because that's when you're in your peak spending career. And so it's pretty often that you do see people with some mortgage balances left in retirement.
Certainly, when we talk to people, we always encourage them to get that mortgage paid off before they retire. Here's another little tidbit that I thought was interesting that has happened again because of the unemployment situation getting better. At least that's the way it's reported to us. Vacation homes in the United States have increased in sales from 553,000 in 2012 to 717,000 in 2013 to 1,130,000 in 2014. Vacation home sales have doubled in the last 2 years. People are feeling very, very confident, and they're now stretching back out and getting the vacation homes, which was part of the whole dream of retirement probably 10 or 15 years ago before we went through the big crisis. One other little interesting tidbit, the Atlanta Hawks, the NBA team, Ryan Belcher, the NBA team, the Atlanta Hawks, just got purchased by the lady who invented Spanx and Grant Hill, who was a former NBA player, and they paid $850 million for the Atlanta Hawks. Let's not forget that the Los Angeles Clippers sold for, wasn't it just over $1 billion?
$1.5 billion.
Just to
they bought the Hawks right before the Cavs are going to sweep them out of the playoffs this year.
That's right.
Well, that's for an NBA team. I saw something today that said there were tickets on StubHub for the Pacquiao Mayweather fight,
mm-hmm.
and there was
the
one
biggest,
seat.
The biggest fight, they're telling us, in boxing history.
In
that's
history.
What they're proclaiming.
There was
yeah.
one seat, center court or center ring, that was going for $141,000 on StubHub.
One
for
seat.
For one seat to a,
to
boxing,
a boxing match.
Wow.
I guess there's probably some warm-up fights, so maybe there's four fights. But 100 and how much?
141,000.
Wow. How much were the cheap seats? Were there any cheap seats available?
I think there was the cheapest seat on there was $5,400 or something like that.
Wow.
And that was in the very back.
Well, we're getting back to a point where we realize that people are feeling awfully confident if we're buying basketball teams for $850 million and boxing matches for $5,000 at the cheap end and $141,000 at the high end. But at the same time, guys, that we always want to bring people back to the behavior that is going to suit them best. Very interesting number that just this research was run this week, and I think it's very important to the people who are listening, who are accumulating. A 40-year-old employee that invests $1,000 at the beginning of every month in a tax-deferred 401k account will accumulate $510,000 by the age of 60 if the fund grows at 7% per year. But if that individual was forced to suspend their monthly deferral for just 5 years between the ages of 45 and 49, amen, that just five years of not making those contributions, the account value would go to $369,000 at the age of 60. So make sure, folks, when you get on the path and you start investing money, that you stay on it. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes live in studio. I want to give you a quick preview of next week's show. David will be gone at an Ed Slot conference. I'll be in here running the show, but he will be joining us by phone. And we're going to be talking about all these different investment vehicles for retirement, 401ks, 457s, 403bs, deferred compensation, IRAs, Roth IRAs, and kind of the nuts and bolts of what's going on, not just as they stand today, but what could be going on in the future. He'll be at no better place to give us the latest information about these vehicles than at the Ed Slot Conference. So stay tuned with us next week, and you're going to get some great information about the type of accounts that impact all of us. Okay, we have Ryan Belcher and Wayne Thacker here in the studio. We're going to talk about state employee benefits. And Ryan, why don't you identify who these people are and what's going on, and as far as who fits under this umbrella?
Okay, well, the first thing we're going to do is talk about the Indiana Public Retirement System. And that will apply to really anyone who is a state employee who's covered by the Indiana Public Retirement System. So locally here, all of our teachers that are with the school corporation, they are all covered by the state system. Anyone who works for the school corporation, there are some people at IU that are covered. There are two different groups at IU. One of those groups is covered by the state system. And if you're a person who works for like the Monroe County government or the city, those folks all have this this Indiana Public Retirement System benefit.
And how do you guys work with them? What is the best role for them, Wayne?
Well, we are the advisors to the Monroe County School Corporation. We're the advisors on the Monroe County government. Really what Ryan and I do is this is a specialty niche clientele for us. We know the retirement system inside out, and we've been hired by a few of the local corporations and then some of the surrounding communities, corporations that have the Teacher Retirement Fund and PERF. We've been hired to consult with their groups as well.
Can you give us some aspects of those systems themselves?
Well, the system in generic form is really just the benefit. There's two separate benefits within the system. There's a lump sum cash account, and then there's a lifetime pension. You can combine these two at retirement, which we'll talk about, or you can choose to keep them separate. There are pros and cons to each way you do it. But basically, there's a pension, which is derived from your years of service and your highest five salary years averaged together. And then there's a lump sum that either you are putting in or the employer is putting in, which we most commonly see here, a lump sum of money that's kind of it's an annuity savings account that, again, you can cash out at retirement, you can roll it to an IRA, or you can combine it with your pension.
I know that there's, we always say to people that they really need to begin checking in on their retirement benefits, you know, 5-10 years before they retire. What have you guys run into about the benefits of beginning to check in and pull all these things together? And what stage do you find that to be most beneficial?
Well, you know, the problem is that a lot of the people that we talk to don't start looking at this stuff until they are knocking on the doorstep of retirement. A lot of these people have these benefits that have kind of been automatic throughout their working career. They've not paid a bunch of attention to it, and it's just kind of done its thing. And then they retire, and it is what it is. The earlier you can start looking at this stuff, planning, deciding how much you should be investing, where that money should be investing, the better off you're going to be. With the annuity portion of the pension, you actually have some control on that money when you're working. At retirement, you have to make some decisions, but while you're working, you can have the make the decision of how to invest that money. So it's very important to look at that, to know what you're doing, and pay attention to it while you're working, not just at retirement.
Doug, I just 1 hour ago, I just met with a 69-year-old teacher who has never looked at her retirement accounts and is now thinking about retirement. So that's pretty common with what Ryan and I see. Might be a year, might be two, might be 3 years away from retirement, but that's the common point in which we see people inquiring about the retirement. But like Ryan said, you need to do it much earlier.
And if I'm not mistaken, aren't you guys providing some education at these locations for people along the way? And so when they see the notice that you guys are going to be there at the local school system or the Monroe County government or something like that, people really should be attending these things, shouldn't they?
Sure.
Yeah, we're doing some neat things right now. Ryan and I are working on a Indiana retirement guide that we're going to get out to everybody we can. We're working on a website which people can go to and actually listen to some tutorials and get some education on what to do, where to go, how to get information, things of that nature. So those things are in the works now, and pretty excited and fired up that we're working on those things.
You know, guys, a lot of times people tend to just look at the bottom line of their Social Security statement, and they do the same thing with their retirement accounts, just how much do I have or how much income am I going to receive. Do the statements themselves give the whole picture, or do people really need to sit down with someone and look over just beyond the numbers on the statement and begin thinking out loud about these different moving parts?
What statements, Ryan?
At this point, the state has quit sending out statements, so that you now can only go online and get those. People definitely need to sit down with somebody and look at how everything works together. That's one of the things I think that we're really good at, is not just focusing in on one piece. The decisions you have to make are going to be different for different people. So it's not kind of a one size fits all thing. So depending on your situation, these benefits are going to be different than maybe your friend or your coworker. So it is important to look at how the benefits relate to you, your situation, and make sure that you do some planning.
So let me reiterate that. You said that the state is no longer sending physical statements to people. They need to go out and find this out on their own.
That's right. So
when did that happen?
It happened within the last year. And wow. If you are a person who is covered by the Indiana Public Retirement System, if you're a teacher or a PERF member, and you are no longer getting those statements, you need to call the state system, Indiana Public Retirement System, and request a user ID and password, and they will send that to you either in the mail or email it to you, and then you can log in to your site and check on your benefits, do some calculations, etc. So whenever people come in to meet with us that have these benefits, we always ask them to call and get that prior to the meeting so that we are able to check on the benefits for them.
You know, I read in the first part of the program, the news and views about the 40-year-old who for some reason has stopped or suspends putting money in for 5 years, the difference between what it grows to if they continue doing that or if they stop. Would you say, guys, that people, the younger teachers, the younger employees, are you finding that they're taking advantage of these programs, and do they really are they getting involved in that? And we just talked about, Wayne talked about someone who's 69 who's just coming in for some a set of eyes to look over things. What are we seeing with our younger people, and how do we get them more involved?
Doug, you know, you talked early on about behavioral finance.
Mm-hmm.
And here in the U.S., and I've heard you say this around the office, all too often people aren't concerned about how much they can put in. It's how much is the employer matching. And all too often, we see that as the stopping point, especially for someone new in their career. And, you know, we're looking to change that behavior any way we can when we meet with people and let them know that, you know, generally just the amount of that match is not going to be enough as you approach retirement.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to start talking about some common questions about pensions and rollovers and the way that this works when you get right to the retirement time. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
We're back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. And today we're talking about Indiana State employees. And we're talking about the pension and really the overall retirement process. And Ryan, we're going to talk about the money that's with the state of Indiana. There's the pension, which is based on years of service and highest five salary years. And there's an equation that's put to that to determine what the pension's going to be. But tell us a little bit more about the pension, the money, the vesting, those sorts of things. If you can expand on that just a little bit.
Sure. And it's important to note that we're talking about people who are PERF employees and teacher retirement employees. There are certain employees that are under the PERF umbrellas, but like police and firefighters, judges, et cetera, that have their own kind of version of PERF. These are for just regular public employees and teachers. As you talked about earlier, there's a formula that determines how much you get in the form of a monthly benefit. A couple things to note on that, though. You have to meet a qualification in order to receive that benefit. So the most common qualification is the rule of 85. Everybody talks about the rule of 85. All that means is that your number of years of service plus your age must equal 85. So, for example, if I'm a 55-year-old employee and I've had 30 years of service, 55 plus 30 equals 85, I qualify for an unreduced pension. Now, keep in mind, the pension is still based on your number of years of service. So if I were to keep working beyond that rule of 85, my pension would still build because I'm adding additional years of service.
Brian, what if I'm 54 with 31 years?
You actually have to be 55 to qualify for an unreduced amount. So if you're 54, then you're not going to qualify. You do have to be 55 and meet the rule of 85. Or the other way to meet it is the rule of 75, and that applies if you are 60 or 65. So if you're 60 and you have 15 or more years, you automatically qualify. And if you're 65 and have at least 10 years, you qualify for that unreduced amount.
And that unreduced amount, that's what we always tell our people. That's your highest pension available to you. But there's two big decisions you have to make at retirement. One of them involves beneficiary designations.
That's right. So that formula kicks out what the Indiana Public Retirement System calls the straight life benefit. What that means is if you choose to take that straight life benefit, you do not have a beneficiary on your pension. So you would receive a pension check for the rest of your life, but upon death, that pension check is going to go away. You can elect to add a survivor on. You can add a survivor as a 100% survivor, a 50% survivor, a 66 2/3, or a couple other variations of those. But what that will do is your pension is now going to be reduced, so you're going to get a little bit less money, but now you have your spouse or someone on that pension so that if you pass away, that person could still keep collecting benefits for the rest of their life.
Perfect. And this, so we've determined this number, whether it's a straight life or whether there's a beneficiary designation. Let's just say we're just going to round that number. Let's say it's $2,000 a month, Ryan. Is that what I can expect to hit my checking account, or are there taxes, Social Security, things like that that are taken out of my check?
There are taxes. It is taxed at the federal, the state, and the local level. You do not pay any Social Security taxes on pension benefits, but you do pay federal and state and local taxes. The other thing to keep in mind is that there is no cost of living adjustment on your pension. So there are certain benefits that have an automatic cost of living adjustment in years where there's inflation, where your pension payment would go up from time to time. The state does not have that feature. They do have what's called a 13th check, where once in a while, if they have the money, then they will send out a 13th check, which may be a couple hundred dollars, but it's kind of a end of year bonus type of payment.
Little known rules, Ryan, such as let's say someone does meet that rule of 85 or full pension, and there's a little known rule, and you and I talked about this today for a potential client that came in. They maybe want to retire prior to the age of 62, and mm-hmm. there is an option with the state pension where you can actually integrate Social Security, a Social Security amount into your pension prior to turning 62. It does cost you some money. So here's kind of how it works. You're under the age of 62. You want to retire. You collect your pension. The state will also include your age 62 Social Security amount with that pension. However, once you turn 62, there is a lifetime reduction of your pension.
Right.
So they can kind of recoup that money.
Basically, what it is it's a way to even out your income if you retire prior to 62. So typically, someone would retire prior to 62. They'd have a pension for a few years, but they'd have to wait until at least 62 for Social Security to kick in. This allows them to kind of even that out. They front load the pension, and then the pension is reduced once Social Security kicks in to kind of even the playing field there.
Here we are in May. A lot of teachers, especially schools, going to end at the end of this, at the end of May. When do people need to have their applications in? How long does the process take? When do you expect first checks to come out?
Well, so if you are especially if you're a teacher, and this is your last school year, you probably should be doing this or have already done this. The state asks you to give them 90 days notice before your last day of work, which is actually considered your last day in the classroom, not necessarily the last day you get a paycheck. So a lot of teachers will retire and still get paid through the summer because their contract goes through the end of the summer. So that the state tells you to give them 90 days notice prior to your last day of work. You're not going to miss out on anything if you don't do that. So what happens is if you don't give them 90 days notice and they're late sending your first pension check out, you may just get two pension checks, but a month late. So you get one for that month and then one for the prior month.
And if you're one of those people that are going to retire at the end of the year, if you're a public employee with a different organization and you don't have that school time frame, probably want to reach out to us around August or September, and we can get you prepared for retirement at the end of the year.
Yep. And we can we help a lot of people file that paperwork. So some people will go up to Indianapolis to file the state retirement paperwork. We can help you know, do that right there in our office. You just need to come see us.
Guys, can I jump in for just a moment? You know, I think a lot of people down through the years have probably made some mistakes, or I hate to use the word regret, but have some regrets about the decisions that they've made on these pensions, particularly around the beneficiaries. What are some rules of thumb in making that determination? Do people look at their overall asset base before they make that determination, or health, or what are some of the rules of thumb in making that beneficiary designation?
The number one rule of thumb is to look at it early. Be prepared before you do that paperwork. Now, you can change the beneficiary. You can change those things. But usually once you make your election, it's kind of final until a life event happens. So the number one rule of thumb is look at it early. Talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about.
You need to be prepared. There's a lot of people that will come in to file the benefits, and they haven't even looked at the difference between the straight life and the survivor benefit. And the other thing we haven't even talked about really is the annuity and the options that you have at retirement. And we've met with several people who have made an election. It's finalized, it's done, and then, you know, later say, well, I wish I would have done this instead of, you know, what I did.
Sure. One last question about the pension. Oftentimes beneficiaries go to the spouse. Where can that beneficiary designation go? Is that just the spouse? Can it go to a child? What are there some rules there?
Actually go to anybody. You can put on a non-spouse or a child as your beneficiary, but if it's a non-spouse and there's an age gap, meaning if you are 10 or more years younger than me or 15 or more years younger than me, then there's some restrictions on which survivor benefit you can take. So I can't leave 100% full benefit to a child if there's a big age gap in there. And the amount of reduction to add a survivor is based on that survivor's age. So if I added a child as my survivor, I'm going to get a pretty big reduction in my pension benefit.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Social Security integration and how Social Security works with the plan. If you haven't picked up on anything yet, it is very clear that you need guidance when it comes down to picking out your pension options. These are long-term decisions that you're making, and you should not make them without some guidance. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We are talking retirement planning this evening for state employees, both in the government level and also in the school systems. Ryan Belcher and Wayne Thacker are here to discuss these things. They've been working on these things, guys, for probably about, what, 7-8 years you guys have been involved.
Yeah, we started working with state employees in 2008, I think, was really when we started focusing on it. We've, as a firm, we've been doing it for quite a while, but we decided to kind of make it our focus and something that we could specialize in, I think, in 2008.
Absolutely. You know, Wayne, you've talked on this show on several occasions. You've given a lot of presentations, seminars about Social Security. You've really taken it kind of on your shoulders to learn as much about Social Security planning as you could and really help people out with that. Tell us a little bit about what Ryan alluded to earlier, the integration of Social Security into your overall plan.
Yeah, I've kind of taken this one by the horns, guys. Social Security is a very important piece of the overall retirement income stream. Usually, you know, we talked a little bit about the pension. Social Security, you guys, Social Security makes up the other, usually two-thirds or other half guys, of the overall fixed income. Stop laughing.
We're not laughing.
Yeah. There's a couple things here to note. Full retirement age for all those baby boomers born before 1954, that's age 66. If you're born after 1954, it could be all the way up to age 67. That's a prime age to remember. If you take Social Security before that age, you're deemed taking it early, which means that you have less choices on some of the different strategies that we're talking about on the show here with the people we're meeting with. The coordination of Social Security is very important, just like Ryan was talking about the beneficiaries with the state pension. Social Security also has some beneficiaries built into it that you don't have to pay for. So beneficiaries with the pension, you've got to take a pension reduction. Social Security, the beneficiary designation's built in. So if you're a married household, let's say, you've got two checks coming into the house from Social Security. When one person passes away, the smaller check's going to leave the house. So it's important to kind of weigh in what the Social Security income is going to be, but not just individually, Doug. Weigh in kind of as a joint household. And same thing, Ryan, we're all the time meeting with people that have maybe dual teachers or dual public employees. I actually had two government employees in the office today. They're both going to have the same pension, both going to have Social Security. And when you really think about it, it doesn't make sense for them both to elect survivor benefit on the pension because one of them's going to lose probably. One's going to pass away before the other, and they've both paid for a survivor benefit. So coordinating the Social Security and those survivor benefits come into play even before you really start thinking about your pension. You kind of want to look at it in your overall plan. A couple of things we want to talk about. The four keys to Social Security that we're talking to our folks about are, number one, the survivor benefits. Number two, the cost of living adjustments. So like Ryan said, the state pension does not have any cost of living adjustments. And you guys know the cost of goods and services are going up over the years. And so there's no inflation hedge there built into the pension. There's a maybe 13th check that has to be voted on and sent out once a year. But it's nothing you can rely on. You can't, I guess you can take it to the bank if it comes. So Social Security has automatic inflation adjustments built into the income stream. So the longer you can hold off collecting your first Social Security check, the higher your cost of living adjustments are going to be. Taxes, like Ryan said earlier, the pension is taxed at the federal, state, and local level. Social Security is not taxed in Indiana at the state level or the local level. So right there saves you just a little more than 4% in taxes just from those two pieces. And not all of the Social Security benefits tax at the federal level. So there's another savings right there just in taxes from Social Security. So again, the more of your income you can get to be Social Security driven as a household, the less you're going to pay in overall taxes on your overall income. And the fourth thing we're talking to people about is, you know, I think we always hear this fear of people running out of money, but what they really fear is running out of income. Mm-hmm. So the more of a person, of a household income we can get to be Social Security driven and pension driven, then the less they have to rely on their overall assets to meet their lifetime income goals. So those are really the points that we're talking about. And when we sit down with somebody, we're taking into consideration Social Security, pensions, investments, what the life insurance needs are, what the long-term care needs. Health insurance is huge now. We'll talk a little bit about Medicare coming up on a show here and how complicated that decision or those decisions can be. But integrating Social Security into the overall plan and with the pension is just huge. And people are making a mistake if they do it as a separate entity. If you just go and take care of your pension, that's done, check. If you go take care of Social Security, that's done, check. You'll take care of your investments, that's done, check. If you do it that way, there's a slight chance or a really good chance that all three of those big income pieces are not working together.
Wayne, what about people if they're divorced or widowed?
Well, you know, on previous shows and in our workshops, we talk about strategies. We've talked about spousal, file and suspend, file and restrict. We've talked about these different strategies to maximize, and I think I'll probably just refer back to another show and what all that stuff means. I won't get into the high weeds today. But just know that if you're divorced, if you're widowed, there are Social Security strategies that you can implement that could increase or supplement those pensions if you're a state employee, that could help your overall income streams, not only now, but also looking into the future for the long term.
Wayne, one thing that I'll add, we get a lot of people that are kind of under the, okay, I'm going to retire, I need to start taking Social Security right away. Thought. And there are some benefits, like you just talked about, to maybe having one person, at least in the household, wait a little while and get a higher Social Security benefit. Could be several hundred dollars a month more by waiting a couple years. So just because you retire doesn't mean you have to start taking benefits. There are some ways around that. Sometimes we see that it helps if someone has a decent amount of money in retirement savings, 401ks, IRAs, etc. Maybe they use some of that money for a couple years, not draw Social Security, and then turn on their Social Security at a later age, and now they have a lot more of their household income covered by Social Security and not having to rely on those IRAs and 401ks and such for a big chunk of their income. On the flip side of that, there's some rules about taking Social Security while you're working. And that's one thing that we always want to point out to people is that if you are taking Social Security and still working and you're under full retirement age, which for most people is 66 or 67 if they're baby boomers, then there's a cap on what you can earn and draw Social Security. Once you hit your full retirement age, that cap goes away.
That's right. And the earnings limit's very low. It's $15,000 and some change, like $400 and some change this year. That does seem to go up a little bit each year with inflation. But on the flip side, that does give that 62, 63-year-old that wants to retire, meets the rule of 85, you can go ahead and collect a pension, sometimes go ahead and collect the Social Security, and maybe work a part-time job, and you're fine. You come in under the earnings limit, and that supplements the overall income
stream. You can deliver pizzas like Doug Hughes.
Hey, there you go. You know, guys, I've said many times, in America, we've been so focused on net worth that we've forgotten about the discussion of net income. And that's really what Wayne is talking about when he says people are worried about running out of money, but running out of income. It's a terrible, terrible thing to think about, right?
It is. No, that really is the scary part. People want to know how they're going to keep their lights on. Like you say, Doug, no one wants to take cold showers in the dark. Right?
I saw something today.
That's a good one, too.
I saw something, a stat today, that the average 65-year-old that is retiring can expect to pay $220,000 out of pocket in retirement for just health care costs alone.
And that assumes that they qualify for Medicare but don't require nursing home, but that's a lot of money.
Hey, guys, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Pardon me. Ryan, we've been talking about the pension so far. Tell us about the retirement savings accounts that these people have.
So when we do our workshops for people and talk to folks, we always talk about the three-legged stool of retirement: the pension piece, the Social Security piece, and then the retirement savings. Kind of as a general rule of thumb, if you've worked in a public situation for 30-ish years and you retire, you can expect to replace about, and this is a generalization, but about a third of your income from your pension, close to another third from Social Security. The remaining third needs to come from savings. So that can be your annuity with the teacher retirement or PERF, Indiana Public Retirement System. That can be your deferred comp plan, if you have a deferred comp plan. That can be your 403B and 401A. Some vehicle that you have saved money into throughout your working career that you can then begin to withdraw to kind of make up that last piece of your retirement income scenario.
Ryan, was that a third, a third, a third?
It was pretty close.
All right, good. Just want to make sure.
Ryan, should they be looking at their risk tolerance, kind of their time frame? How do you guys give some analysis through that?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing to point out is that depending on who your employer is, you're going to have an opportunity to save money into one of these retirement savings vehicles. And Doug and David are going to talk more about this next week. But just real quick, if you work for like the school corporation or the hospital, for example, you have a 403B plan. So you have the state plan through the state, then through the employer, you have this 403B plan. You save money, it goes into a 403B, you save it out of your paycheck. The employer will typically match up to a certain level if the employer offers a match, and that goes into a 401A. If you work for the city or the county or some other organization like that, then you have a 457 or a deferred comp plan where, you have an opportunity to defer money out of your paycheck into this retirement savings vehicle throughout your working career. Same thing as we talked about with the annuity. While you're working and you're deferring that money into these plans, you have to pick how that money is invested. A lot of them will have a default investment that is kind of an age-based scenario. So if you are 20 years away from retirement, they try to map up your age with a 20-year time frame and invest it accordingly. But there are other investment options to choose from. So that's where what Doug's talking about. You need to kind of look at that stuff and plan accordingly.
Great. And Ryan, that stuff should be reallocated, rebalanced. How often? I mean, when people come in to see you that are in that accumulation stage, again, we keep going back to coming in to see, getting some guidance, getting a plan put together. As Wayne said, we need to do this early, not last minute. Are you making rebalancing allocations when people have these questions about the market's up, the market's down, or are these
we always talk to people and say it's more time in the market versus timing the market. The point there is if you just save from the time you're, a young worker, save systematically, let the investments kind of do their thing, pick good investments, let them do their thing, you're going to be in a pretty good situation versus trying to rebalance at the right time. Now, as you get closer to retirement, you definitely want to be doing that. But that's where some of these age-based plans, like I'm talking about, a lot of 403Bs, 401Ks, deferred comp plans now have these age-based investments. They do that for you. So you don't really have to worry about day-to-day changing your allocations. They're set up to slowly over time move into a more appropriate allocation for people.
Fantastic. And Wayne, when you talk to people about how much they're saving, we always say to the people, just save as much as you possibly can. Next week, we're going to talk about the limitations. But when we were at last break, you told me, what are the limitations for contributions on the 403B?
You know, most of these plans, there's a contribution limit of $18,000 for 2015. If you're over the age of 50, there's a catch-up contribution, an extra contribution of $6,000. So someone 50 and over can actually contribute $24,000 this year to their retirement plan. And a quick note, had a phone call today. They were putting in last year's contribution limit. So it's important. These limits sometimes do go up each year with inflation and things like that. The IRS loosens the strings and allows you to put a little bit more into these retirement plans each year.
You know, back in the throes of the market downturn in 2008 and 2009, Dr. Jeff Rosenzweig was on the show with us. And I remember we're talking about the markets and performance and what was going to be going on. And he said on this radio program that the people who just do the most saving are going to be the ones who actually outperform and do very well over the next 10 years. And what we like to say to everyone is that sometimes it's not just a performance analysis of how things are going or a fee analysis. Sometimes it's just a savings analysis. And so when you come in to meet with Ryan and Wayne, particularly if you're working in the school system or the Monroe County government, you know, you don't need to wait until you're 60 or 69, as Wayne pointed out. People in their 40s, people in their 30s need to come in and start talking about how much they need to be saving. And more than that, just their overall financial plan. We're finding out that with all the information that's out here, and there is all kinds of it swimming around the internet, talking with people around the water cooler, listening to people in your family. There's all kinds of information out there, and everyone has ideas, but very few people have a plan. And if you don't have a written financial plan that you can go to, point to, and do some analysis on, you really need to get one going just so that you kind of know exactly where you're at and what you can expect. I think one of the worst things is not knowing what to expect. The generation who retired prior, they knew when they were going to retire. They knew what their pension was. They knew what everything was, and they knew when retirement time was. I am getting the cue that we need to take another break. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. In studio today, having too much fun. This is Money Tree Thacker, and we're going to talk about what it normally looks like for someone to go through the retirement process. You've got to go to your HR person. You've got to collect a bunch of information that you have no clue what it is. You've got to go to the state of Indiana. You got to drive to Indianapolis, sit down with somebody that cannot give you any advice, only the information, and you're going to sign some paperwork and have it notarized. Why not go to www.cfci.us? We can kind of walk you through all these things, including Social Security and Medicare. Thanks for listening. It's Your Money with David Hayes.
Those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.